This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. Glenn Leverin's in for Vacationing John today. Big hour coming up. Wednesdays, you know, very productive generally. If you're going to buy a product, one that's built on Wednesday is always a good idea. Everybody is kind of back to work from the weekend and not mentally checked out yet. So we're going to have a great show for you. We'll get you inspired in the Lord as well as bring you some good info this hour. Pablo Kay joins us. He's editor-in-chief of Angeles News, looking at some big stories in the news, including the Supreme Court tackling the life issue, all the way down to how churches are under some persecution in Nicaragua. We're going to learn about that from Pablo Kay coming up. The latest from Rome with our Rome correspondent Ashley Nerona. Find out what the Holy Father is up to this week. Have one of those story corner things. And now we're going to dive into tackling the issue of young people. Why they leave the church and how we can get them back. To join us with that, the pastor of the Church of St. Olaf, the Church of St. Gall, and Church of St. Charles. And we appreciate him taking some of his spare time between running three parishes to join us here on the radio. It's Father Jeremy Plouffe from the Diocese of St. Cloud, Minnesota. Father Plouffe, great to have you along.
Good to be with you, Glenn. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. You had kind of an interesting, very interesting take. It was a survey and some results posted online about why people start attending church in terms of what's the spark that gets them there. A friend inviting me at 86%, you know, an organized visitation projects, you know, and hats off to those working on those, 6%, invited by the pastor, another 6%, advertising, all that fancy marketing, 2%. So it's that personal connection. Do you find that's the case for dealing with young people as well?
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things where we can put all the marketing out there we want, or we can have the pastor going out to every single local event, the county fairs and all the like. But if you don't have somebody you know, someone that you can sort of walk in hand with, shoulder to shoulder with, most people, especially the young, we're just seeing time and time again, it's just a little too nerve-wracking or a little too, I'm not quite sure what this otherworldly type thing is, the church. And so I'm going to stay away unless I know that I can walk in with somebody. And it shouldn't be that foreign a concept to us, because we see the same thing when it comes to other school events. You know, lots of times people aren't even willing to join a sport at school unless they know someone else that is doing so.
Do you think young people today are more or less oriented toward having their own pack or posse with them in order to kind of do anything?
You know, I think we see that a lot. I think there is, you know, we have to have our clique. It makes us feel comfortable. It makes us feel like, you know, we won't stand out too awkwardly. Although there are still those who are willing to take a step forward and go at it on their own. And that's the type of young Christian that I get excited to see. I mean, I think especially when you see a college-age kid who's ready to go out to Mass and ready to even bring others into Mass, that's a really exciting person who is really following through what St. John Paul II would talk about in the new evangelization, saying, you know what, I need to go out and not just bring myself to Mass and the other sacraments, but if I can bring a friend or two friends, and maybe that two friends will bring another two friends of theirs and so on, that's what the new evangelization is really all about.
Father, is it accurate to say that we used to be able to assume kids would be brought up in the church and then maybe they would fall away late high school, during college, and kind of trickle back in with marriage and kids and all of that, and that used to be kind of standard way the ebb and flow went a little bit, but any part of that is not automatic anymore?
Absolutely, Glenn. I think that's a good insight that you're having. And I think more and more what we're seeing from even good Christian parents is this sense of like, well, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to tell my kid what to do. Even in the high school years, and certainly in their early 20s, I think we see lots of even the strongest of Christian parents of these 20-something-year-olds Even taking a step back and saying, you know, I don't want to tell my child what to do. He or she is now a young adult. And it can be disheartening from a pastor or a priest's point of view to say, like, well, goodness sakes, I mean, you raise them, you know, let's not just let them fly away here with the winds of time here. But there's something to be addressed with that of saying, you know, there's some sort of thing going on in the world today where even strong Christian parents don't quite feel like they can tell their high school or 20-something year-old kids what to do anymore.
We're talking about how to bring young people back into church. Father Jeremy Plouffe joining us for this portion of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio as we take that look. I guess first off, with that kind of being the situation and that recent study, I guess, in the last little over a year, that often kids will decide they are kids, barely kids, 12 and 13 years old, that they're not interested in organized religion anymore. That seemed to be kind of a shocker for everybody in the business and parents as well, that's an awfully young age to decide something that big and then kind of take that action when given the opportunity to take that action to quit coming.
You know, absolutely. And I think that there's a whole host of things that we can look at to say, from all perspectives of why is that happening to them, to what is the church failing to do to address those needs. And one of these many, many things, and there's certainly a host of factors there, one of the many things is that we're seeing is that people tend to look at Mass or any sort of churchly event, whether it's any sort of prayer service even, as something to be entertained. And so we see people coming to Mass and not just simply saying, I'm bored, but to say, like, well, you know, I'm used to at home, I can flip from one streaming service to another, or I can switch from my television to my tablet. And in Mass, they see I'm not entertained, as if the church is equivalent to a movie theater. And that seems to break them away from the start. And so one of the things that we have to talk about, not just at a local parish level, but even a worldwide level of Catholics, to say, like, okay, how do we make sure that we train the young, maybe especially as they're preparing for First Eucharist and maybe even as they're continuing on through those primary school years, hey, this is something bigger. You're participating in something bigger than just going to see a movie or being entertained. Mass and other liturgies, especially at the church, it's really being part of something larger than yourself and not something that you can say, well, I'm not entertained, so I'm not interested.
The old entertainment paradox, how to keep them entertained when that isn't the main thing. Is there something to be said, or maybe a lot to be said, for just making the whole family show up, including Dad, to show up for Mass each and every week, so it becomes a habit, and through that habit we gradually soak up the inspiration we need that makes us want to go back on our own week after week?
See, I think now you've hit the nail on the head there, Glenn. I think that's absolutely it. It's something that's often criticized of, oh, you're just following some old habit because grandpa did it and great grandpa did it and so on all the way back. But there's something, I mean, if you even compare it to schoolwork or learning, it's like, you know, yes, at some point, you know, we're just doing homework because we have to do it or we'll get in trouble at school the next day and maybe not have recess or what have you. But when you establish a love of learning, right, that gets you motivated in school, and that can get you into a really good way of making sure that you have a wonderful career or that you even just get a chance at the job that you want when you're done with your schooling years. And you can kind of say through an analogy, a similar thing going on in the habit of going to Mass, in the habit of praying in the morning and praying in the evening and praying before meals and so on. There's something at first that's just obligation of, like, yes, I'm doing this because I know I'm supposed to. But once you say, like, yeah, I'm committed to this prayer before I go to bed. I'm committed to going to Mass every single Sunday with my family, and I'm going to do my best to put my all into it. That's when we really see the virtue of prayer, the grace from the sacraments, and really a change in us for the better, not only in a practical sense of we're nicer people, we're more generous with others, but in the fruit of what the church wants, and that's a real shot at eternal life in heaven.
Father, do we really need to focus on making some of those moments? We talk about teachable moments, about things kids need to learn throughout life. And, you know, maybe it happens out during a nature walk on the weekend. Maybe it happens in the pickup truck driving with dad to the hardware store. You have a conversation where something really clicks. But to watch for and try and create some of those moments when faith things can kick into action. Of course, the Holy Spirit needs to be involved. I think for myself, came around the time, you know, in my attendance at Sunday school kind of varied from year to year, depending how motivated my folks were to bring me, but ultimately they did enough that through those confirmation ages in junior high, it really clicked for me. You know, got to learn the nuts and bolts of it. It kind of made sense in that great movie Jesus of Nazareth was out at the time on TV, and saw that, and it was a great 1-2 punch to kind of lock it in for me. And then I was really enjoying the high school Sunday school that we had. And then, of course, you know, without a lot of people to do the work, they started grabbing some teens that kind of knew a little bit, and we had to teach the younger kids in Sunday school. And so gears shifted again. But looking for those moments, and again, thinking as a young 20-something, reading scripture kind of kicked in, and you got this hunger. Maybe you started with a program to try and read things regularly, and then you got reading ahead more than you had to that day to kind of keep on pace for getting it all done in a year. And just for those moments, and then to really be alert as a parent or, you know, godfather, godmother, somebody who might be involved in the faith life of a young person, a grandparent, to watch for, to encourage, and then watch for those moments to kind of fan those flames.
Yes, and I love, Glenn, where you started and where you finished with this segment here. That was really perfect, because it's getting comfortable even with those conversations. I recall for myself even, like in middle school, when a friend might bring up Christ or a friend might bring up something about the faith, there's some sort of cringe that I had in that, like, well, maybe it's some combination of, well, I don't know a lot, or this is something we just do on Sunday morning, and some kind of combination of those factors. But as you're saying, if you're just on the way to the hardware store with your parent, or you know, you're just talking with your godmother and like about the practical things in the faith, or even just as you're saying, getting used to, like, yes, I can read the Bible. This isn't weird. Yes, I can pray even at school before we eat lunch. This is not goofy. Getting yourself used to the waters more than dipping your toe into the pool. The more you get used to it and the more you encourage yourself, your kids, and others to get used to it, it's going to be more instinctive that, yes, I will do the Christian thing. Even when it comes to morality, when I train myself, no, I'm not supposed to lie, even as a white lie, it comes more natural, even the morality of the faith. And so I think that's so right with everything you said there of just, you know what, when we get ourselves used to this, when we make sure it becomes a habit, and we help others, whether it's just in the drive from school to home or whatever it might be, just to being comfortable with these conversations, being comfortable with these topics, being comfortable being Christian, then we really have a great launching pad to be excellent Christians.
Had an extended family reunion gathering last weekend, and there many of them very religious and don't mind talking politics either. And so we kind of joked, I said, hey, it's my business to, you know, talk politics and religion every day on the radio, so I don't mind delving into these conversations you're not supposed to have in polite company. But that idea of being comfortable, being comfortable talking about those things. And, you know, when we talk about reaching young people, Father Jeremy Plouffe, our guest today for this portion of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio, and how to win and get back young people into the church, because we really need to build up young people to keep the church going. We need to do that every generation, every year. We need to keep doing that. But being comfortable with talking about faith can really be part of the authenticity. That seems to be the way we need to approach young people, especially with very serious matters.
Yes, and that brings us right back to St. John Paul II or St. John Paul the Great, who would talk about it's that generation. Yes, we have to reconvert each generation and not just expect that, well, this area was Christian last decade, and so it's going to be Christian this decade as well. And he talked about evangelizing areas long since evangelized. And to your point of, like, each generation needs to be evangelized. And we can see that too with, I mean, even in the practical sense of, you know, if you're going to have, like, you know, I baked bread last week, you might say, and so there should still be bread here. And it's like, well, there might still be bread here, but it might be stale too. And that's the thing with the faith, and where we make sure that our habit of going to Mass doesn't become just old habit, or doesn't just become yesterday's tradition, a dusty thing. You know, there's a saying, and I can't remember who this saying is attributed to. I imagine it's a saint, but I don't recall who said this originally. It's that tradition and the habit of faith is not dusting off an old bookshelf. It's keeping the flame alive. It's feeding the fire, right? And that's what we're talking about when we're evangelizing the next generation or evangelizing areas long since evangelized, is that we're not just dusting off some old bookshelf. What we're doing is we're keeping the fire going. We're restoking the fire with new logs so it can still be burning brightly, so the light of Christ can be seen by not just this area or that area, this family or that group of families, but all people.
Father, you work in a rural area of Minnesota. Are there distinct challenges in trying to gather young people's info in a rural area versus an urban setting?
Certainly. You know, we see it just in the practicals of being spread out, yes, that how do we gather people together in a central location? And then even, and this is not exclusive to rural settings, but when we have things like sports going on, especially in a rural area, people have to go a long distance for things like hockey or even baseball to get enough people together for a team and to be close enough to another team to compete. And so then when it comes to things like Mass, it just, darn it, it always seems like, well, Father, we'd love to come, but we have the softball game. Father, we'd love to be there, but the kids have hockey out of town. And it's one of those things of how do we slowly shift ourselves and our own mindset to say, well, wait a minute, Christ sacrificed for us on the cross. And maybe there are things, even these fun things that, hey, maybe we could be willing to sacrifice if it means something for the church, if it means something for our own faith, if it means something for our own practice of the faith. We might have to be willing to sacrifice even these fun things, just as Christ sacrificed for us on the cross. But certainly, the rural challenges are there, and I think one more addendum to that would be, especially during sowing and harvest seasons, you know, where everybody, not just the farmers, but everybody who supports farming with their own work is incredibly busy, and just even making it to Sunday Mass for some people is quite the miracle.
As we talk about rounding up young people, and when we find the gold nuggets, those young people that are really into the faith, those young people that are willing to be leaders among other youth, it's just anecdotal, but my experience in knowing and working with farm kids, you know, some of those rural kids who grew up with the hard work that's part of life on a family farm end up being awesome humans and can be a great force for the faith.
Absolutely, and certainly being in rural parish life, I never have a lack of people reminding me that, Father, don't forget, farming existed before the first sin happened. You know, Adam and Eve, they said they tilled the Garden of Eden, so it existed before the first sin. But you're absolutely right. It tends to be a real virtue builder in that hard work and that commitment to doing something larger for yourself. And that transfers, you know, not just simply to practical work from farm to job, but from farm to church as well, and recognizing that in the Holy Faith that there is something bigger than ourselves going on, just as on a large farm or a small family farm or anywhere in between, there's something larger than just a job happening here. They're feeding the world at the end of the day.
Yeah, in their spare time, that's great, when they're not at the youth group. Oh, hey, well, blessings on the great work you do in the rural life there in the western part of the Diocese of St. Cloud in Minnesota. We thank you so much, Father Jeremy Plouffe, for joining us on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. We continue a whole lot coming up yet this hour. We'll talk about a variety of things with Pablo Kay from Angelus News and the latest news from Rome. Ashley Narona joins us next, our Rome correspondent. Coming up, Story Quarter on the way to all straight ahead here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. It sounds like we're heading to Italy with our Rome correspondent, Ashley Nerona, as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. Good morning, Ashley.
Buongiorno, Glenn. So glad to be here and to hear that wonderful song. I have to tell you that my grandmother, Giovanna Puglia, used to always sing that song to me. So it brings back lots of good memories this morning.
Oh, that is great. That is just great to hear. That is great to hear. You know, and I have such an upper Midwestern radio accent here that I'm not even going to try and say buongiorno to you because, you know, I mean, hey. Chef Boyardee is about as Italian as I can get, right?
Well, I thought your buongiorno sounded great. Well done, Glenn.
Well, great to have you along, and we welcome back Pope Francis to those Wednesday general audiences this week as well.
That's right. In fact, during the month of June, there was a summer holiday there, and so those audiences did not happen. I meant to say the month of July, and that's very typical. Every July, this occurs. And so this was also the time during which Pope Francis had his recent surgical procedure and gave him some time to recover. But now, as per usual, in August, the audiences have started up again. And now in the Paul VI Audience Hall, which is inside the Vatican walls. Now, the reason that they're being held in that audience hall is because it's covered. And so that means that during this time of year with that hot August sun, the folks who are waiting for the audience can be in a little bit more comfort. The hall can hold about 6,000. It was about a third full today. In fact, one of those happy couples there in the audience hall were our friends Abby and Stephen Carey, who came all the way from Illinois on their 1 month anniversary of marriage to have their marriage blessed today by the Pope. So they were there, and I know that they are a Relevant Radio family too, Glenn. And so back in June, Pope Francis began his catechesis on St. Paul's letter to the Galatians at that general audience. And so he picked it up from there today. He spoke about Paul's enthusiasm to evangelize. So how he just was completely dedicated to that mission of evangelization, and nothing else interested him but the proclamation of the gospel. And he pointed out that when he preaches, Paul doesn't think of the four gospels, as is natural for us, since, of course, at that time, none of the four gospels had been written. And the Pope pointed to Paul's human side and the bitter disappointment that Paul felt when he was watching the Galatians taking what the Pope called a wrong path, which would lead them to a point of no return, as they were potentially moving away from the salvation offered through Christ and turning away from the gospel by following new preachers. And on a side note, the passage that was read today that the Pope was alluding to was Galatians 1, and specifically verse 8. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one we preach to you, let them be under God's curse. And so then back to the Pope's message, Paul knows that the gospel he preaches is the only authentic one because it's that of Jesus Christ. And of course, it's Christ's gospel that is the only one, and there can be no other. And so although the world may distort the gospel, the Pope said today, that with the truth of the gospel, you cannot negotiate. Either you receive the gospel as it is, as it was announced, or you receive something else. It's something that just cannot be negotiated with. And then at the end of the catechesis today, the Pope prayed for the people of Lebanon on the 1 year anniversary of the port explosion in Beirut. And then he also asked all the faithful to pray for pastors today, that they may specifically follow the example of St. John Mary Vianney and bring the living gospel of their witness of love and mercy and solidarity to all, Glenn.
Well, Ashley, great to hear things getting kind of back to normal for the Holy Father in Rome there, too. And it's, of course, part of the regular summer break. But any word on his physical condition? Is his recovery continuing on schedule?
Yes, it seems to be going as planned. Today at the audience, you could see that he was definitely feeling his sciatica. This is an issue that he's had for a long time. His limping was a bit extra pronounced today. So surely he's probably still feeling tired as he continues on the recovery process, Glenn.
Actually, many parts of the U.S. Dealing with wildfires and the smoke from neighboring countries drifting down from Canada as well in the upper parts of the U.S. Midwest. But this is not the only part of the world dealing with wildfires. You have some in your neck of the woods there, too.
Yes, that's right. In fact, on the island of Sardinia, about 1,500 people have been evacuated. About 50,000 acres of land in the central west part of the island have been destroyed at this point. So nearly 8,000 emergency workers have been called out from throughout the country to help. This means firefighters and soldiers and police and civil protection volunteers as well have come on the request of our foreign minister to lend whatever help that they can. And in addition, the EU is also contributing. France and Greece have given planes to help with water bombing, as they call it. And why is all this happening? Well, there's a heat wave, and these southwesterly winds have been contributing to this blaze spreading really fast. At this point, it's not possible to estimate the damage of the fires. Like I said, they're calling it an unprecedented disaster. And as of today, they have put out a new warning. So that means that Sardinia remains in what's called an orange, a code orange. So basically, this is meant to be a time of extreme caution. So we continue to pray for the people, especially of Sardinia, Glenn.
As we get the latest from Rome with our Rome correspondent, Ashley Nerona, as we continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio, looking at some other goings on in that beautiful area, the recent Feast of Chains. Not everybody might be really familiar with that.
Yeah, it's so true. This is a feast that not many know about, but it's very specially celebrated here in Rome. So this happens on the 1st of August at the Basilica of St. Peter in Chains. And within that basilica, the chains that would have bound the very Prince of the Apostles, Peter himself, are kept. Now, this church was built over the baths of Trajan there. So it's right in the most ancient part of the city. And it dates back to the middle of the 5th century AD. And the date on the 1st of August was actually chosen to celebrate this feast to substitute the pagan feast honoring the Emperor Augustus. Of course, August was named after the Emperor Augustus. And so what inside that church, inside a great big glass reliquary, hang these chains. There are 11 links, and these would have, as I mentioned, actually bound Peter. Now, there's also a part that would have gone around his neck, so it would have bound his hands and his neck. And in days gone by, the popes used to, even as gifts, they would shave little particles of the chains off and close them in a golden key and give those keys, of course, representing the key of Peter, to as very special gifts. So what's happening now during this time of celebration, during this octave of celebration of those chains, is that people are making pilgrimage to that very church, the Church of St. Peter in Chains, to venerate the holy relics. And also St. Paul is honored there, because four of the links of the chains that bound St. Paul's arms during his captivity in Rome are also there as well. So another beautiful feast reminding us of the richness of our faith, Glenn.
Oh, talk about real history right there. My goodness, what a relic, what a relic.
Yes.
Well, I got to think in August here, when it's as hot as it ever gets in North America, right? The irony of celebrating the miracle of the snows, which of course would be why it's a miracle this time of year, I suppose.
That's right.
But talk about that coming up tomorrow, yeah.
Yes. Well, Glenn, so this goes back to the 4th century, when a couple here in Rome, they were a wealthy couple and they had no heirs, and they wished to donate their possessions to the church. So they prayed and they asked for the Lord for understanding on how to do that. And then on the night of August 4th, 5th, in the year 352, Our Lady appeared to the couple in a vision and told them that she would reveal the site, a site where they should use their gifts to build a new church. So the story goes that on that very same night, they went to the Esquiline Hill where Our Lady had directed them, and a miraculous fall of snow landed on the hill and created the outline for the church of that we now know today as St. Mary Major. And it's said that Pope Liberius also traveled to that very snow-covered site and then traced that outline of the church. And, of course, the church was built. Now, interestingly, of all the major basilicas, St. Mary Major is the only one whose foundations, whose shape has never changed. And so to celebrate this incredibly miraculous event, yes, snowfall in the middle of August heat in Rome, each year at the Church of St. Mary Major, they hold a two special masses where at the end of the mass, they actually drop white rose petals from the ceiling of the basilica to represent that miraculous fall of snow. And then tomorrow night at 9 p.m., there will be, they actually recreate the idea of snow with a snow machine. It is lots of fun. They bring in local bands, there's music, people are so enthused and excited as you wait for the countdown when the snow begins to fly in every single direction in the middle of August. And of course, everyone cheers and gives thanks to Our Lady for this amazing miracle, Glenn.
Oh, that is great. That is great. You know, here I sit with all the snow I ever need for like 6 months out of the year in Minnesota, but I'm still smiling picturing this, especially thinking of those flower petals floating down from the ceiling, too, and how beautiful that must be.
It's a wonderful thing to experience, yes.
Oh, well, and speaking of beautiful, you know, if we could send some cake through the radio waves here, we would do that for you, celebrating your 9th anniversary of being with Relevant Radio. Thank you and congratulations.
Aww. Well, John, thank you so much, Glenn, because you know what? It's been such a joy to be with you over these 9 years. It's been such a joy to get to know you, Glenn, and to also have the opportunity to share Rome across the airwaves. I mean, it is such a joy for me because it's my dream every week to invite our listeners to take a special trip to Rome. This is the heart of our faith. And for those who've been here, I want to recreate the opportunity to imagine visiting these holy sites. And for those who haven't, to have the chance to have this virtual trip of the richness of our faith right from the heart of where it all is. And so it's such a gift. And also another gift is getting able to actually meet members of our Relevant Radio family. So many people come over to visit. And it is such a joy to spend time with people who love the Lord, to hear their stories, to hear the stories of how Relevant Radio has affected their lives, and to hear how they carry around little stories that I share about the richness of our faith and culture and how people also hope to be able to bring that to their own lives, whatever country they're living in, maybe even their own churches, and start special celebrations like these. So it has been nothing but a joy, Glenn, and I've enjoyed every minute of these last 9 years.
Well, you certainly do seem to enjoy that. That joy does radiate, and that is just awesome. Did you ever still pinch yourself, realizing that, wow, I get to work in Rome and tell other people how great it is?
Yeah, that's true. Yes. You know, it's funny, Glenn, because when my husband, John, and I moved here 13 years ago, we guessed we'd maybe stay for two. And instead, the Lord has just told us in so many ways that this is where He wants us right now. So over that time, it has been filled with such incredible blessings, for which I am so grateful. And it's been so neat to be able to share things like, for example, a papal conclave with our listeners from right up close and personal. And of course, we did that together, Glenn. That was so exciting. And to also help people, for example, during this COVID time, you know, Italy was about 6 weeks ahead of the U.S. And so to share the experiences of what was happening here so that people could be prepared back in the good old USA for what was coming. So yes, I definitely pinch myself, and I am so grateful for this chance, Glenn, and I look forward to continuing the fun.
Well, we do too as well. And again, thanks for all your good work. It's so great to have someone on the ground with such good enthusiasm and accuracy of everything that's going on. And 9 years in radio, we had a former supervisor that had spent his entire career and his family as well in radio. And he remarked that radio years are like dog years. So 9 years, it's a long time. And we'll keep that going, Lord willing. Thank you so much, Ashley. Look forward to another update next week. And we continue with Morning Air, our story corner on the way, and a chat with Pablo K as well. That's right around the corner as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
From Maui to Maine, you're listening to Morning Air with John Morales, coast to coast on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. It's Glenn in for John today, looking at some interesting things in the news from a Catholic perspective. It's kind of what we do day in and day out here at Relevant Radio. Joining us right now, Pablo K is here. Pablo is editor-in-chief of Angelus News to look at some of these stories. Pablo, great to have you along today.
Hey, Glenn. How's it going? Great to be here.
Yeah, doing well, doing well. Might be summertime, but that doesn't mean things aren't cooking, especially when it comes to life issues. And one of those we want to look at is something Congress normally handles, and it's maybe a little hassle to keep passing the Hyde Amendment each and every time, but that keeps abortions from being funded by taxpayer money. But that's been left off of an appropriations bill, which is the normal way that's taken care of.
Right, you know, and pro-life advocates are regarding this the Hyde Amendment. They're understandably very worried. Like you said, the first time, and I think since 1976, that it's been left off the budget. This was one of the few kind of measures to limit abortion that found agreement across both the sides of the aisle. Right, Republicans and Democrats, I think over the years, kind of saw this as a sensible piece of legislation.
Well, we find, you know, in the last couple election cycles, now it used to be abortion was an issue that people had positions on, strong positions in real life. Politicians had positions too, but they didn't necessarily like to publicly stand by those, especially if it was on the pro-choice side. But nowadays, we find people thinking that's the best thing you could stand for almost. And so there's less and less of a worry to even have a vote on record against life.
Right. And you see this, unfortunately, the example of our president, Joe Biden, just the second president of the United States who professes the Catholic faith, and all his very long career on Capitol Hill, especially in the Senate, and then also as vice president. This was, even though he kind of maintained this public support for abortion rights, separating it from his private opposition to legal abortion. This was always something that he himself advocated for, this Hyde Amendment and other similar limits and constraints on federal funding for abortion. So for him to come out, I think it was really months before the general election, in support of removing the Hyde Amendment, was a big shift for him, and kind of, I think, an indicator of the direction that the Democratic Party has gone in terms of buckling down on support for abortion rights.
You know, our bishop's understandably not happy with this news about the Hyde Amendment. A statement from Cardinal Timothy Dolan, chairman of the USCCB's Committee for Religious Liberty, and Joseph Nauman of Kansas City, the archbishop who's chair of the Committee on Pro-Life Activities, say the House has voted in a way that's completely out of step with the will of the American people, who overwhelmingly oppose taxpayer-funded abortion. Plus, the Hyde Amendment, they figure through time, has saved 2.4 million lives since its enactment. And we know, talking to pro-life workers, anything that disrupts kind of that easy flow of just driving to the abortion center and getting it done right now, anything that gives people pause and the time to think, even if it's people out on the sidewalk, not even holding signs, but out there obviously in a posture of prayer, can make someone stop just long enough to change their mind and save that life. So every measure like this is of great importance. Talking with the editor-in-chief of Angelus News, Pablo K is with us today. And another giant pro-life bit of news in the news, currently at the Supreme Court, a Mississippi law that would make abortion illegal after 15 weeks of gestation. This looks like it's the one that's had the best chance so far, Pablo, to challenge Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, like you said, I think it is important to to understand this is really giant. I think we as news consumers can get a little numb over time, even in the Catholic media, to the different stories that come out from the Supreme Court and the different kind of abortion laws that are challenged or upheld, which, you know, different kind of limits at the state level on legal abortion. But rightly so, I think this is I think what several pro-life advocates are calling the biggest abortion case to hit to go to the Supreme Court in the last 30 years. Why? Because at the center of what the court is expected to rule on, discuss, contemplate, is this 15-week cutoff that the Mississippi law imposes, right? And so if what's at stake is whether having some kind of viability timeline like this 15-week one is constitutional or not, right? And so depending on how they rule, that could lead to an unraveling of the right to legal abortion in other states. It could potentially undo Roe v. Wade and send the matter of legal abortion back to the states and back especially to elected representatives. So this, there has been no case like this in decades.
No, and this is a very good opportunity for some pro-life things to happen on the federal level. States, especially southern states, have been passing pro-life legislation left and right, and it's been up to the states to do that. And then, you know, time after time after time, a district court will knock that down, you know, a court of appeals. And so here we go. That's something ready-made to go to the Supreme Court. And there are more cases after this one, should this not do the trick as well. But Pablo, it's important to remember, too, for folks to note that are out there praying for the cause of life, ending Roe v. Wade would kind of send things back to the states. And so there would be no nationwide approval of legalization of abortion, but it would be up to individual states. And states have been kind of lining up on one side or the other with a lot of legislation that would automatically go into effect the minute that Roe v. Wade would be overturned, to make abortion illegal in many states and completely legal in every possible way in many others. Some worry this could lead to kind of abortion tourism.
Oh, and I think it's totally a legitimate concern. We don't know what such a ruling would lead to. Also, I think at the cultural level, right? Things are already so tense. There's so much political polarization. And to apply this kind of 2021 political polarization to the issue of abortion, things could get very complicated. And so I think we all pray for an end to legal abortion as a matter of basic justice in the country that we love, there's also, I think the bishops rightly so like to remind us that it's more about winning or losing legal battles. It's really building a culture of life in this country and in this world where every child is welcome from the moment of conception, is respected, cherished, and which the state, the society, values the family.
You're talking about life issues and more with Pablo Kay. He's editor-in-chief of Angeles News, joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. And as we continue to keep the life issue in prayer, up next, a story that maybe hasn't made, you know, the main headlines in the mainstream press, but we need to keep an eye out as Christians and Catholics on persecution of the church around the world, and sad news of a great, in a bad way, arson attack on the cathedral in Managua, Nicaragua.
Well, yeah, a few days ago was the one-year anniversary of this terrible attack on the cathedral in Managua, really an act of sacrilege, and in which eyewitnesses said there, you know, somebody went in there screaming profanities and saying clearly an attack directed at the church, at the faith, right? But Nicaragua is interesting because it's a traditionally Catholic country, so it's not the kind of country that we would typically think of as a place where Catholics or Christians are in danger, you know, where there's some kind of political opposition to the faith. In fact, the country's president, Daniel Ortega, likes to somehow insinuate that he's the real Christian, he's the real Catholic here, and that the bishops are two-faced and and hypocritical even in their personal lives, all kinds of terrible accusations. But really, there's few countries in the world where things have gotten to this point, right, where there's this standoff between the country's Catholic bishops, the hierarchy, and this president and his wife, who also wields considerable power, and who also has expressed a deep animus for the Catholic Church, for the faith. This president, Daniel Ortega, accuses the church of being behind these demonstrations that broke out about 3 years ago that led to violence and tension between protesters and police, right? And so the church finds itself in a really tough place because the bishops know they can't become political players, right? They can't become a political entity. At the same time, they have to stand up and say the truth and take the side of the poor, of those who are bearing the brunt of the consequences of this regime, if you will. And they also need to stand up for basic religious liberty, right? For the right to worship, to express their faith. And so again, being in a country like Nicaragua where Catholicism is deeply embedded and part of the national fabric, actually I think makes this even a lot more complicated.
To look at this in a different way for a moment too, you know, would we be in a country here in the U.S. where the government was so worried about the church and the influence of the church as Ortega is in Nicaragua?
Well, it's hard to say. It's such a wildly different dynamic, I think. For example, one interesting thing, you know, here when a year ago when the federal government and the state governments imposed all these lockdown measures and churches were closed and public gatherings were banned or limited, you know, after a few months, the church, different bishops kind of had to speak up and advocate for a return to mass and really asking. Pointing out that in many cases religious gatherings and things of the like were being treated unfairly while people were still shopping in supermarkets and doing other things. In Nicaragua, actually, it was kind of the opposite. President Ortega, from the start, was kind of in coronavirus denialism and saying, you know, this is we'll all be fine, business as usual. And it was the bishops of the country and the priests in some cases who had to speak out and say, no, President, there's a real threat here. And they themselves took it upon themselves in some cases to close the churches and limit other activities out of concern for public health. So it's, at least for me, it's a bit hard to compare the two situations. But I think the fact remains, in the U.S., as in Nicaragua, we Catholics are called to kind of find our voice in speaking up for our rights, especially in a country like the U.S., where the freedom of religion, of worship, is in the First Amendment of our Constitution.
Well, Pablo, that's all the time we have for the moment here, but I always appreciate your insight in depth into some of these ideas and some of these news stories as well. Invite folks to check out Angelus News and find out a little bit more about what's going on with the life issue as well as what's going on in Nicaragua and so much more. Thanks for your time, Pablo. Look forward to touching base again very soon. There's more coming up right here on Relevant Radio. Coming up right now, it's time for today's Story Corner. Our story today is called Guidance in the Word by Alfred Lansing. In 1914, Ernest Shackleton and a team of explorers set out from England to do something that no one before had accomplished, cross Antarctica from one side to the other across the South Pole. Disaster struck, though, when the team's ship Endurance became entrapped in ice and eventually sank after her hull was crushed. Marooned on nearby Elephant Island, there seemed little hope for their survival. In a desperate effort to get help, Shackleton and five others set out on a 20-foot lifeboat across some of the most dangerous and storm-filled waters in the world. It was an 800-mile journey to South Georgia Island where help could be found. For 15 days, the men battled the treacherous seas and massive storms with waves of up to 100 feet. Using only a compass and a sextant, Frank Worsley, who captained the Endurance, navigated their course till they safely reached land and found help. Shackleton procured another ship and returned to rescue all of his men. He became a national hero in England for his courage and persistence. All of us are making our way through a stormy world. Ever since the first sin in the Garden of Eden, mankind has struggled to make wise decisions about an uncertain future. The only way to ensure that we do not go astray is to have an objective source of truth that will guide us. Just as a compass can guide sailors through dark and uncharted waters, God's Word can guide us through uncertain and difficult circumstances. We must simply trust it over our feelings, over our own wisdom, over contrary advice others might give us. Because the Bible is inspired by God, it is without error, and we can always trust it. Isaiah 40:8. The grass withers, the flower wilts, but the word of our God stands forever. That's our Story Corner for today. If you'd like to hear it again or share it with others, it's available in podcast form on our Relevant Radio app as well as the Relevant Radio website, relevantradio.com. And boy, that is a fabulous story. I encourage you to read up on the journey in that amazing voyage of Ernest Shackleton, Sir Ernest Shackleton, Shackleton's Valiant Voyage, one of the books I got into as a young person to learn about that story. And, you know, being halfway bored, fishing with my dad sometimes in the boat, you know, it gave you good fuel for the imagination as well. Our journey continues next. There's more Morning Air on the way. In the next hour, we'll talk emotional intelligence with Dave Durand and maybe a little Packer-Viking rivalry as well. Father Marcel Tyone joins us for a look at St. John Vianney, too. All coming up as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio.